You're a funny guy, Sally. I like you. That's why I'm going to kill you last.
What do you want to tell me now, tough guy? I said, Bing, what are you doing here? I thought I'd tell you to go fuck your mother.
You don't trust me at all, do you?
I tell you what, you make it through tomorrow without killing anybody, then I'll start trusting you.
Fair enough.
Remember, Sally, when I promised to kill you last?
That's right, Major. You did.
I lied.
All right, this is Kill You Last. I'm Peter Garaci.
I'm Alex Bechera.
And finally, we have Perry Strong coming on. What's up, Perry?
Hey, what's up, baby? Thanks for having me on, man. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, yes. I've been wanting to do this with you for a while. You're a movie guy. You're a guy who actually knows how to make movies.
Yeah, movie nerds unite.
And you picked a movie that I don't know that well, but I watched it because it's a movie that 80s movie nerds talk about.
Right.
But it's not one that I really was like familiar with, so I'd love to hear why you picked this movie.
Yeah, my pick is To Live and Die in L.A. by William Friedkin.
Yes.
This movie, it's weird because it's like, I feel like it's the first, when it came out, it changed action, and like action trailers you see today, like the first trailer that looked like that was the trailer for To Live and Die in L.A. Like the modern trailer is based off of that. And it's dark and it's rated R. There's threesomes, there's cocaine.
Yeah.
Everything good about the 80s is in this. And this movie in particular, the ending. Do we talk about the ending?
I think we could go up front and say that, yeah.
I can't say another film where you have a protagonist taking you on the path, going through this really crazy journey, and with maybe 10% left of the film, he gets shot in the face with a shotgun, and his corny-ass sidekick has to finish the movie.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild. I was startled. That was one of my favorite parts, though, in hindsight, after watching it, was that they were like, no, fuck it, we're doing it this way. We're going to kill him. I love that. Yeah.
It's real. It's a level of real in an action film that no one's ever tried. It's like, yo, sometimes a guy doesn't make it to the end. It doesn't mean what he was trying to do doesn't get completed, but he doesn't get to see that. And I saw that shit when it came out. Mm. You know, I didn't see it in the theater, but I saw it on HBO first run. I must have been 11, you know?
Yeah. I love Predator, but you know that Schwarzenegger is surviving Predator. You know that every one of those guys is going to die except for Schwarzenegger.
That's right.
And even, Alien, like the whole premise of Alien was that Sigourney Weaver was the one you would never pick. But I'm sure in the trailers for Alien, you realize that she was the star of the movie.
Right.
So whether or not the premise is unusual, I'm sure they sold the movie as this movie stars Sigourney Weaver.
Right. So Which means, from credit to credit, you're going to see that face.
Yeah,
you know,
this movie's interesting because Friedkin is like, we talk a lot about how like the 80s, like all the 70s star directors kind of took the 80s off, or they went in like weird direct. Like, so Friedkin starts with Exorcist and French Connection back to back, like monster hits.
Right,
French Connection wins Best Director, Best Picture, Best Actor. Right. Exorcist is not like couldn't be like guys on top of the world.
Best, yeah.
But like then he had like all these guys like Coppola, De Palma, Scorsese, all of them kind of like had a rough 80s. I mean, a lot of them now we look back and go, actually, those are great movies.
Right.
They just weren't necessarily what we were looking for from those directors. The audience wasn't there at the time.
Right, right.
But like this is a really interesting, Friedkin is one of those guys that I think is still like the most, one of the most interesting guys from that era of directors.
So you would know more about that. See, I couldn't even tell you the movie he made after that. Exorcist, I know French Connection, and I still think that the chase scene and To Live and Die in L.A. is better than the French Connection.
Yeah.
I prefer it.
The one in French Connection is more famous because it was like more shocking at the time.
Right.
And again, that movie was Best Picture. Yeah. But Friedkin's kind of gone up and down. Like he's making like small movies now.
Right.
He's done a couple smaller things. He did Jade, which was like a really trashy movie with David Caruso.
Caruso? Oh my God.
And Linda Fiorentino, which everyone's kind of like,
That's forgettable. But
he's done interesting stuff. And hearing you the way you describe like killing off the protagonist, Friedkin like kind of studied under Alfred Hitchcock.
Mm.
He like famously Hitchcock told him that he directed an episode of Alfred Hitchcock Presents, when he was very young.
Okay.
And Alfred Hitchcock says a movie director wears a suit and tie on set.
That's what's up.
He kind of shamed him for like not dressing properly. So after that, freaking always wore a suit and tie on set. And I'm wondering if this movie, like, this is an homage to Psycho, because Psycho famously, you're right, following the lead character, she gets killed, and then the movie is about her sister trying to solve her murder.
Oh, shit.
So he's I didn't think about that until you just said that. I'm sure that freaking in the back of his mind, he was thinking that.
I think I know. Well, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just gonna say, like, when you're doing this kind of stuff, it's like you're like, how do you raise the stakes? You know what I mean?
Right,
like, especially
right.
if you're already known for, like, French Connection, like, you've already made your stamp, so it's like, how do you up the stakes? And right. killing off the protagonist is a major way to fucking
major,
up the stakes.
Major.
Yeah.
I could tell you, I remember the moment I saw it, where I was. I was in this apartment. I was sitting in the room. Like, I must have been 5 inches from the television, you know, my mom screaming at me because I'm going to go blind. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember this happening, like, shotgun boom, and you're like, that didn't just happen. And you're in shock for a while.
Yeah.
And then you got to watch fucking Bozo close out the film, but then he becomes a hard ass. You still don't, I mean, you know, he's trying. Whatever.
John Pankow.
John Pankow.
I can't believe that he didn't go on to be an action star in the 80s. had a long, this guy's
career.
Yeah,
long
Mad ahead. About You. He's the best friend on Mad About You.
Episodes? He was on episodes?
Yeah, so he's done like probably 200 episodes of television, at least, maybe more.
Yeah, no, that's so he's a good actor.
He's a good actor, but not an action star.
Right.
This whole cast is great, though. Everyone. I mean, Totoro's in it. Who else is in it?
Willem Dafoe
is great in it, and you could tell he's like, they could have went further into his character. I felt like.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I think I think Friedkin also purposely picked. These were like young theater guys,
right?
William Peterson. And when at this time, these guys were all known in either the Chicago or the New York theater scene. They were not stars.
Right.
And I think that's another where Friedkin was like kind of taking a risk.
Yeah.
Like putting, like, you know, good actors in roles rather than movie stars.
Yeah. Yeah. But I will say Peterson is funny because he's totally the 80s lead. And he calls people Kemosabe and shit like that. You know, you see in comedy, we make fun of that shit all the time now.
You ever see, he's in Manhunter, which is one of my favorite 80s movies.
Michael Mann.
The original Hannibal Lecter movie. And he's kind of playing a similar character. He's got like the hard-on cop down.
Yeah, yeah, he's that cool guy cop with a deep tan.
But I definitely, when I noticed watching this, like the 80s, like the neon, like this movie, it's like, and it's funny because, you know, this movie's about a Secret Service agent trying to catch a counterfeiter.
Yeah.
Which is a very, like, I'm like, why didn't they just make him a coke dealer? Like, there's so much coke, like this movie is so coked out that they don't even need to have cocaine in the movie.
They definitely had it on set, for sure.
They definitely had it on set.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
And the question I have, there's a lot of actual and implied dick in this movie.
Oh, go on. What do you mean?
Like, I don't.
The shower stuff?
No, the sex scene, you see fucking William Peterson's dick.
Oh, yeah, I guess
I don't know. Do. How did I miss this? I'm all about the Perry. I don't know if you know our podcast, but dick shots are like my forte. I call them out. We stare at them. We analyze them. I can't believe I missed this.
You know, I don't remember the dick shot, to be honest. I don't remember. I didn't rewatch
it. Are you sure you're not making this up?
No, I couldn't believe.
No, that sounds right. That sounds right. I think Willem Dafoe's dick is in it.
Whoa!
Isn't Willem Dafoe's dick in it?
You would expect, like, Willem Dafoe is the guy you're like, oh, I've been gonna see his dick. There's a lot of his butt. There's a lot of like hit, like he's like kind of twisted around. Like, that's what I'm saying. There's a lot of implied.
Gotcha.
Characters in the scene are looking at dicks, whether or not the audience can see the dick.
That's what I mean
by implied dicks.
And then also, there's a weird cut in the movie. Well, Willem goes up and kisses what seems to be a man, and then they do a cut, and it's a woman.
Oh, yes.
It has to be a man, but it actually is a man when he first cuts, when he first kisses him. And then they cut, and it is a woman. So to make it, they didn't trick you. They just really just had him kiss a man, then switch it to a woman.
Yeah, I remember being kind of like, something's up here.
You're like, what's going on with this? Oh, okay. Yeah. All right, word. All right.
So in this, the cinematographer's Robbie Mueller, who... I wasn't a bit, I didn't know a lot of it. He did a lot of, he did Sid and Nancy. He did this movie. This is a really cool look. And Perry is a filmmaker and a cinematographer. Mm-hmm. And this is a movie that I definitely, more and more I notice the photography in movies, and I'm always and like cinematographers, like they're an interesting breed because
weird motherfuckers. They're weird.
But they're like they're technicians. Like they're guys show up to, you know what I mean? Like it's a job. Like it's a I go to work, I do my job. I got the director wants this, the actor's doing this.
Yeah.
But they're kind of like they're crazy artists in their own right.
Right. They're super creative, but they're super technical. They understand light and measurement of light. You know, it's, you know, whereas the director's like, oh, just give me this, you know, whatever.
Yeah. So that, right. I thought that was really cool that, because again, because like French Connection is literally like they're on the street, like stealing shots, like they're doing stuff without permits.
Yeah.
This movie is a much more like composed movie.
This is a big LA, this is a big Hollywood movie.
Yeah.
And it's funny because people always thought Michael Mann made it. I remember it was like, I remember always having to people like, oh yeah, Michael Mann. I was like, no, man, William Friedkin made that. Because that was, that look was the Michael Mann, that Michael Mann took that over with Miami Vice.
Mm-hmm. Well, so it's funny because I was watching it and I was thinking Michael Mann. Because one, like, it doesn't make me think LA when I'm watching. I think like the shitty parts of Chicago when I'm watching, which is a Michael Mann thing.
Right.
Like
right,
Michael Mann, it's funny because Michael Mann started in Chicago and then went to LA.
Yeah.
But any of his movies could have taken place, like Heat to me is like one of the all-time great LA movies.
The best.
And the real characters that the movie's based on are Chicago guys.
Yeah, that's the truth. So well, he made that movie, he made Heat twice.
Yeah.
He made it, you know. Once poorly and once, what was that?
Oh, dude, if you ever find on YouTube the
LA Takedown?
The Pacino and De Niro scene, but the LA Takedown version of it is on YouTube. And if you want to see the difference between good actors and bad actors,
right.
The guys who are not Pacino and De Niro doing the dialogue, not good. Not good.
I love it. I love it.
This does have a Michael Mann, which I mean, I love about it. That's a great, to me, that's a plus.
Yeah, no, it's, I love how it's bright, but it's dark at the same time. It's really, it's a very adult film, you know? I don't even know if you can make a movie that, I mean, a movie's that, I feel like it's darker now, darker. It's like, I feel like it has a 70s darkness to it. You know what I'm saying? I feel like it has a 70s attitude in the 80s.
Hmm. That's freak.
Does that make sense?
Like attitude. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
You know?
We talk about this a lot, like the 80s are not one thing. Like if you look at, and it's funny because this movie is 85, which was kind of like brighter, more positive 80s.
Right.
Most of like the darker, cynical 80s movies are like 82, 83.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And then like by the time you get to 87, 89, you sort of get like they're commenting on, you know what I mean? Like, Stallone, I mean, Schwarzenegger's already doing Twins by like 89.
Right.
So he's already like making fun of his character from three years before.
Right.
So this movie's interesting in that. I mean, maybe that's why it wasn't a bigger hit, is that this is the darker.
It's too. It was too. Frame. I think it was too dark.
It was ahead of its time too. It was ahead of its time. It was not to say it wasn't like taking classical elements and stuff like you know things from the 70s, but I think it was ahead of its time. People wanted a more simple action movie. I think, and this was like an advanced.
This is heavier. Take. It's
yeah.
heavier. There's a yes. heavier. It's a heavier, darker place. There's no jokes. There's no fucking jokes. You know.
It's which is nice because it's not corny. A lot of 80s they get very corny. So this is a good watch now because you don't have any of those moments. I thought it was great that they just going back to the ending. It's literally the only action movie I've seen where it's like a realistic outcome. Like this guy that we're following. He keeps taking these badass chances. Like he's a fucking crazy man. And that's the way that all these action stars are if you think about them in real life. Yep. And what would really happen to a guy like that is one of the chances he takes, he'd get shot in the face. Like
that's
it. It would happen. And it would happen that fast. And it would be that shocking. So I think that like when that happened and I had a like 5 minutes or whatever to reflect on it, that was what impressed me the most about this movie.
Yeah, man. You can only go to the well so many times. Yeah.
And, it's funny because I'm so programmed by movies that I'm like, it's going to be really hard for him to walk away from that gunshot to the face.
Right.
Yeah, no, you're fucking.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean,
shotgun to the head.
Is he just going to have a bandage on his face the rest of the movie or what are they going to do? And then I was like, wait a minute. There's no way he died.
Right. Oh, yeah. Right. That's how shitty things are. It's how you're like, well, right, you got to make it to the end. You know, and then we're going to watch this guy with terrible makeup for the last 15 minutes. And
right.
Thank God they were like, no, this dude's dead. Stop
dude's
it.
Dead.
Cut
he's
it out.
Taking
watch
a bunch
him,
of
watch
chances.
The rest of the movie. Shut up.
I like it. I love it. I love that. And yeah,
great poster too. Great movie poster. Sorry.
Oh no. Yeah. Go. Let me pull that up. Actually.
Yeah. See. The movie poster. It really is. I really do feel like that movie is the beginning of like that's from there. Action takes a lot from that movie, and applies it. Even though that movie probably didn't do. I don't remember how well it did. Like I said, I saw it in HBO, but. It takes the cut of the film trailer as we know it today. It's the first one. Like a lot of trailers before that are slow and lame. Like it's cutting music, titles are flying, and it's like, wow, okay, that's what the Die Hard trailer becomes. That's what Lethal Weapon trailers become. Like all of that stuff. So that movie was ahead of its time in so many ways.
Yeah, for sure.
But it also like it has real film noir elements, and like that a lot. That's the cynicism. Like the protagonist is actually that's really not that good of a good guy. The femme, right. The femme fatale that's literally going back and forth between the bad guy and the good guy. Like those are all noir elements that are used really well in this film.
Absolutely.
And Defoe, like I've never been a big Willem Dafoe guy. Like he creeps me out.
Oh, I love him.
Well, yeah.
But in this, like, that's exactly who he should be in this movie.
That's Rick Masters. That's, he'll always be Rick Masters to me. You know, he's just that guy. That's the character, you know, and he's scary. That's a scary dude.
Yeah.
He's a scary, like, that's one of the few times in an action movie you're like, actually, I think the villain is more dangerous than the hero.
Yeah.
You know, so you feel it. The movie actually has some weight to it.
And I love I love young John Turturro.
I love Turturro's one of my favorite actors.
Yeah, he just would, and he like in this era, he just kind of pops up in stuff. Like he's in Color of, he's got like a couple scenes in Color of Money.
Right.
And he just like, you know, he was like a New York theater guy, just a kind of funny looking, kind of goofy.
Yeah.
And like him and like Buscemi, I feel like they're like, if you go back and watch movies from this era, you just see like little snippets of them.
Right.
And then all of a sudden they're just everywhere. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But like, they're guys that like, and it's funny because all the guys that went on, like the Coens and Tarantino and all that, like, you know, they're all fans of these like 70s directors. So I'm sure they're watching these movies being like, oh, these are my heroes, like later work.
Right.
You know? And then like, oh, look at like, maybe I can't get De Niro, but I can get John Turturro.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's how these guys like blew up.
Yep. Yeah.
And then they became, you know, huge stars in their own right.
Oh, for sure.
So good.
And I want to shout out a movie that I'm dying to do that we haven't done yet is American Ninja. And Steve,
wait, what?
You never seen American Ninja?
Michael Dudikoff?
Oh god, one and two.
Why
man.
Do you want to do that?
Because
I've never heard of it. What is this?
American Ninja
is like 17 of them.
Well, yeah, but the first two are the real ones. American Ninja is about, I think he's a Marine, and turns out he's actually a ninja. Like he
this
was.
This sounds
like,
fucking awful.
I forget the plots exactly.
Turns out he's a ninja.
Well, he was like, he was an orphan, and he was trained by a ninja. He's kind of has like a secret past.
And yes, it's a white. It's a
white man.
It's a white guy. Michael Dudikoff.
But the Last Samurai thing from Chappelle's show is so fucking funny that I'm going to make a movie.
Well, there's a reason it's called, it's not called Japanese Ninja, it's called American Ninja.
right.
It's called White Guy Ninja.
White Guy Ninja, there you go.
Who's that guy? Was it Paul Mooney from Chappelle's show? He's talking about The Last Samurai starring Tom Cruise.
The Last Nigga on Earth.
Yeah. I'm going to make a movie called The Last starring Tom Hanks.
He's the best.
It's one of the best jokes of all time.
So the buddy in the American Ninja movies is Steve James, who's the black guy in this movie who's got a... How do I want to say it? He hires to get Turturro killed.
Okay, like, so there's a guy in American Ninja that's in To Live and Die in L.A.
Yeah, the guy, Steve James, is in To Live and Die in L.A. He's the black guy with the mustache and the fro at the basketball game, who he hires to have Turturro taken out.
Okay, there you
who
go.
Who also, like, tragically died very young, died in his 40s, but like had like a little bit of a run in the 80s. And like when I saw that he was in this, I was like, oh man, this is, I'm in good hands now.
Yeah.
For some reason, the dudes are playing basketball in jeans.
Yeah.
In LA.
That's a New York kid in LA.
I noticed that. And so the movie starts, Peterson and his partner's retiring. Mm-hmm. And his partner ends up getting killed. So he's got like a personal vendetta.
The fishing rod.
Against Defoe. But the partner is like scouting out like what he thinks, what he's correctly assumes to be the location where they're making all the counterfeit bills.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But he's wearing a coat, which I'm okay with, but he's also wearing a scarf.
He's wearing a scarf.
Which like, and the scarf is like, and I'm like, if I'm like climbing fences and shit,
yeah,
I don't want to get the scarf caught. And barb, you know what I mean? Like, I'm big into the gear and the outfits. And yeah. Like, if I'm gonna like break into a warehouse to find murderous counterfeiters,
right?
I don't want the scarf to be the thing that fucks me up.
He's not dressed for that. That's hilarious.
He's wearing like little knit gloves too. Like, he doesn't even have like I'm a fucking Secret Service agent and I got cool gloves.
No, he's dressed like he's going to Barnes and Noble or something.
Yeah, yeah.
He's going to get a hot cocoa on his way to the bookstore.
It's the truth, too. Oh, my God. Oh, it's so corny and
good. Was it immediately before that, William Peterson bungee jumps wearing like a Bronco Billy fucking denim vest and jeans.
Yeah. Why? I don't know. The costume considerations weren't really – I don't think they were really
– I mean, that was the 80s, man. He was on – that was some cool guy 80s shit. No one was bungee jumping. That's the first time I ever saw what the fuck a bungee – I didn't know what that was when I saw that. I was like, what is this? And I was like, what's this? I think I saw it and didn't know what it was called for another year after seeing that. I was like, oh, and the guy jumped off the bridge.
I love when movies like introduce like new like crazy – like remember like after new the trends. James Bond – everyone's going to start doing parkour because it was in the Daniel Craig James Bond movie.
Right.
I mean, like,
right.
2 years later, no one's doing parkour anymore.
Yeah, that's true. That's the thing. Right. Jackie Chan was doing parkour.
True.
In 82.
Yeah.
Buster Keaton style.
They should make a movie called White Guy Jackie Chan.
Yeah.
And they can introduce it to
White. Starring who? Who would starring be White Guy Jackie Chan?
Shit, I want to be Hemsworth. Blackie Chan.
Yeah.
I want to be Blackie Chan.
Yeah, Blackie Chan. That's someone's made that. Come on the internet.
I love it.
Yeah, man. This is a good. And you know what, Peter? You mentioned this earlier. This is definitely seen as a like 80s movie nerd cult classic. After doing some research online, people. It's like small pockets of people love this movie intensely. It didn't do well when it opened up, though. So this wasn't like a huge, huge success. So, and I mean, like, you know, it's not like the cast was smaller. I guess they became bigger. But
right. They didn't have the pull when they dropped. Right?
Yeah, that's true. That could have been what it was. But
we also like this movie. In my mind, I put this together with there was sort of this like subgenre of like medium budget. Like kind of drama, like kind of cynical movie. Like Jeff Bridges was in a bunch of them in the 80s. Like Cutter's Way is another one that's fucking amazing.
Right. That I never watched people those, know. Yeah.
There's 8 Million Ways to Die is another Jeff Bridges movie from this era. I feel like all these actors too, it's like the more serious, quote unquote, dramatic act. Because you have like the Schwarzenegger and the Stallone stuff going on. So for like the more quote unquote serious actors, there was either like the boring stodgy movies that went on to like be nominated for Oscars, or there was this sort of like mid-level kind of like, you know, some like detective movies or like kind
like,
of
oh, they'd be like the Burt Reynolds joints, like was it like Sharky's Machine and shit like that.
Yeah, like or like stuff like based on like mystery novels and like detective novels and stuff like that.
Right.
So like this is like kind of a genre onto itself, and this is sort of missing today. Like, you don't see these kind of like mid-level like serious movies where it doesn't have to be this huge phenomenon.
Right.
It's
just a small
contained story. You know?
Nobody wants to back that because it's not everyone wants a guarantee. You know, that's the problem with.
Well, in a weird way too, it's like when you think about it. Like again, you have Coppola, Friedkin, De Palma, all those guys in the 80s, they're no longer able to make like these big, huge movies. So they're having to make, you know, movies based on novels, a kind of medium budgets.
Right.
But in a weird way, like our guys, like think about like the guys who were huge in the 90s are still, for the most part, making big movies.
Yeah.
So like if like
Venture, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. If like if P.T. Anderson had to make like a $15 million like detective movie, he might make something like this.
Right. That's true.
Or if like Tarantino is still making like $100 million like, you know, movie of the summer movies. But Tarantino is 26 years into like into being a hot director. So really like at that phase of his career, he would be making these kinds of movies if he had the limitations that these guys had. You know what I mean?
Like, I wish he did. I really wish he did that limit. Yeah. I wish someone needs to tell Quentin no. That's what I worked on Kill Bill. People need to tell that nigga no.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's something to be said for like boxing an artist in and being like, you're only allowed to use these paint colors. See what you can do.
Right.
Because what happened to the Coppolas and the Freakins and all this stuff is they had that early success. So they were basically given carte blanche. Right. And then they fucking blew it. Like they cost a lot of people a lot of money. Like they bankrupted a bunch of companies.
That's it.
And then they were told no. Like Tarantino, you know, if Tarantino bankrupts a company, he might have to do like a $15 million dollar, you know, neo noir film.
Mm. I'd love to see that. I'd love to see it.
Yeah, because even you know, it's funny because like they do make those movies, but they become like events. Like a P.T. Anderson movie is still an event, even though he is making kind of weird, kind of interesting.
Inherent Vice, what was that? The thing,
you
what was that?
Which I have to go back and rewatch again because I haven't.
I can't.
Really?
I don't understand what the fuck is going on?
I watched it once, didn't love it. I'm like, it's one of the. I love Joaquin. I love a lot of the guys that are in that movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't understand. I think maybe it might have been five times. I don't know. Just passed out. I was like, I don't.
That's how I am with Hateful Eight. I can't get into Hateful Eight.
I cannot watch Hateful Eight. Go ahead.
I could tell you as an actor.
Yeah.
I love it as a storyteller. I think it's the worst piece of shit ever. You're what the hell did I watch? But everyone is murdering it. The acting is fire. But everyone's doing the greatest job acting about nothing.
Yeah, you know it's saying? Just like it's going nowhere. It goes nowhere.
Well, I think we've talked about this on the podcast before. Like Tarantino's editor died after Inglourious Basterds,
Susan Meekins,
and she definitely reined him in.
Right.
And now he doesn't have anybody to say, quit. Maybe not do every movie 2 hours and 50 minutes.
Yeah.
Let's try to do it.
The new movie's good. It's good. But I will say it's another one by the end. You're like, oh shit, I'm just watching a day in people's lives, and there's no theme, there's nothing to learn, and it's this amazing execution of getting nowhere again, and you're like, all right. I mean, here's the thing.
See,
I love him. If he ever watches this, hire me, Quentin. Remember we worked on Kill Bill, nigga. I'm not trying to diss, but that shit was...
See, I love... Well, like,
I would say out of the scope of things, we're positive. I don't know. I like Quentin Tarantino. I don't know. Yeah. Peter might have a different opinion. There are people that fucking, like... there's like movie Twitter people that hate Quentin Tarantino. No. They're like,
I saw Pulp Fiction at 15 years old.
Yeah.
That's a movie that I will like recommend for the rest of my life. Like that movie changed my perception of movies. Yeah. And so the fact that he's still in my life 26 years later.
Right.
And I love Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, but I love putting it on for 15 minutes at a time.
Yeah. Right.
Like, I don't need to know what happens next. Because it's just like it's like set piece after set piece after set piece.
Right.
And individual set pieces are great.
Right.
It's not like I'm dying to like know, you know, dying to get to the end
of
the movie.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. If anything, sometimes I don't want to watch the end because of
I found myself doing that. Yeah. I'll watch the beginning, even though the end scene is dope in that movie. Right.
Yeah.
But
that's more like the character. And whereas like we did Terminator last week, I'll watch Terminator beginning to end.
Yeah. Terminator, you got to watch the whole movie.
One and two straight through all day.
And a lot of these, again, too, like I don't know what it is now where everyone feels like every movie's got to be 3 hours fucking long. But
yeah, crazy. What is that? I don't know.
A 100-minute like action is perfect.
I can't even think of a movie over 2 hours where I'm like, yeah, that felt right.
It's so rare. It is so rare that you're like, this wasn't, you don't have a moment, a scene where you're like, this didn't need to be in here. Like,
and listen, I'll tell you this. I'm the guy, I sat and I watched a like 11 Laserdisc version of Dune where the scenes they didn't shoot, they showed text. for 5 minutes
what the
on the screen. And it was like it was crazy. We just sat, me and my friend, we just sat and just watched Dune for like 5 hours. It was crazy. There was a 5 hour version of this.
But let me ask you, sorry. Do they make these specifically for filmmakers, or this is like for consumers that would want
to
watch?
No. See, look, if you go back to Laserdisc, I was a straight up crazy person in high school. That's what I spent my money on. I should have bought stocks. I'd be not working now. Right. But I bought Laserdisc and I would rent Laserdisc. There was a place called Kim's in Manhattan. It was the best place in the world. They had every Laserdisc from all over the world. And there was Japanese versions of some of these movies where it would be like, all right, here's a 4 hour version of this movie, the director's cut or some it's crazy. I don't even know where they got this version of Dune from.
Oh, wow.
But look up Laserdisc Dune and put in like 4 hours. That shit will pop up.
I'm sure it will. I've never even, I guess I didn't even know the term Laserdisc before just now. What is a Laserdisc?
It's like a DVD. Meant like a
CD. Yeah, like a DVD.
It's like a DVD that's the size of a record. So it was the original digital technology.
12-inch disc.
Oh.
It was an analog. It was a laser, but it was still an analog. An analog video signal, but it was a digital audio. So it was the first way you got Dolby Digital. I had Dolby Digital in this house because I had Laserdisc. In 97, you know?
That's interesting. They blended, so they had digital audio with fucking still like film?
Well, it wasn't film. It was film. Still a beam. It was a beam, but it was analog video signal. I mean, it was like super VHS. But it didn't degrade because there was no tape being moved. There was no friction. So Laserdisc was awesome, shit. Like I spent $200 on a 6-disc version of The Fisher King.
Jesus fucking Christ, Barry.
That was one of my favorite movies.
$200 and 95.
One movie was $200 and I had a lot of them.
I remember when I was a kid, there was like VHSs would be like $45 when they came out.
What?
It was And before 1985, they were $100.
Oh, my God.
Well, Alex, you have no idea. Like,
incredible.
There was a time when a movie played in the theater, and then if it was available on VHS, you would wait a year for it to be available on VHS.
I understand that. And then
and you would wait another year for it to be on HBO.
Right.
So if you, for like the people who really wanted to own shit, like they ponied up. A lot of, I remember even like skateboarding videos. I would get like a skateboarding video. It was like $30 on VHS.
Oh my God.
Back when I didn't know when I was going to get my next $30.
Yeah. Right?
You know what I mean? It was like, this is all the money I have and have access to.
Yeah. I'm going to say something really fucked up and I shouldn't say as a filmmaker. I have no problem coming across an illegal copy of a film because of how much fucking money I spent on Laserdisc,
your grandfather DVDs,
and VHS. You know what? I've bought Die Hard on like 7 different fucking formats. Okay, I've had it. I had Beta, VHS, Laserdisc, DVD. You know what? Shit. Yeah, it's too much. It's too much.
You've paid your dues. It's not you that is causing any sort of disruption.
I put in deep money. So deep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm realizing how little I've spent on shit.
Should throw $20 into the pot just for.
I should actually.
You just like, there you go, everybody.
I got to be honest. This is one of those movies you cannot find this movie on a streaming platform or like on anything really.
Yeah.
Like only way to watch this movie is you're either buying the DVD, buying it on Amazon, or you're illegally downloading this.
Right.
Which I think is also like another problem. It's funny because I remember when Netflix first came out, I still get DVDs sent to the house. It's actually
It's
actually DVD.
No, it's great. It's great. Yeah.
It's DVD.com, a Netflix company.
You're the only people in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember an early article.
What's up?
You're good.
There
you go.
About, because I used to go like to the library and request VHSs from other branches of the library.
Nice.
When I saw The French Connection for the first time, it was a library VHS
that
I borrowed, and like it was a big, you know, it was a big deal. I remember an early article of Netflix was the beauty of Netflix was because, you know, Blockbuster wouldn't carry a lot of these smaller movies because it was not profitable for them. So you'd go into Blockbuster and there'd be fucking 87 copies of, I don't know, whatever was popular in
Kindergarten Cop.
Couldn't find like the one small movie. So Netflix was able to like carry these smaller movies and you were able to see like The Conversation or one of these like weird, like more obscure films.
Right.
But the thing that's happening with streaming now is streaming is also kind
of for the big
censoring.
One.
And so you can't, like, a lot of these movies are just memory hold entirely. It's like, yeah, I go on there and I'm scrolling through. I'm like, I mean, for like a fun exercise is to go on any streaming platform and just search actors or directors and be like, really, this is your Clint Eastwood collection? Space Cowboys? Like, that's the only Clint Eastwood movie you have?
Yo, trying like, to watch, trying like to watch Robert, Josie Wales is impossible.
Or like Robert Mitchum, like one of the greatest movie stars ever. Put him in there, there's nothing. Like all these, like put in William Friedkin, you'll probably get fucking Jade, and that's it. Like it's like
because it's 8 cents.
Yeah. So like, but
that's why this will never die. This online illegal sharing of files, because like, especially for movies that get lost in the shade or like classics that are too expensive for. Because I'm sure like the Clint Eastwood collection. I'm sure whoever owns the rights to that probably gets paid a lot when they sell it to a streaming service, you know? Like, I'm sure that's why they're not putting it on there. But anyway, people have that shit, you know? It'll go on forever. And sometimes I joke about how I illegally download all these movies that we watch, before the podcast and stuff. But, I mean, for real, a lot of times it's impossible to find these. So, I don't know. I mean, people are going to do it until they start arresting people for it, which they never have. So, it's not happening.
Let Trump continue. He'll get us. Yeah.
I also like it's the same thing with music. Like if you're really a fan of these artists, they're still even if you're
you can still support them.
Even if you're downloading some of the stuff without paying, the fans are still sending money. Like I know if an artist
you're
is
going
like, still
to
alive,
see them live. Yeah, there's tons of ways.
Yeah.
I just hope that you know these kinds of movies don't get lost. Completely.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying, Peter. I got them backed up on my hard. Every movie we've ever done is on my external hard drive. So I got like 80 fucking 80s classics.
That's the next level of Kill Your Asses.
I own
them. Video library.
Yeah. I could sell this library for like some money to people.
But we're going to talk. I want a dupe of that shit.
Okay. Yeah, we can figure that out. Yeah.
So absolutely. You know what I was going to say going back to the disc thing? You know what? The cool thing about discs is like I have this crazy home theater I put together and when you watch a streaming movie and then you put in a disc, like you get the disc sent to you, dude, it's night and day. I feel like I'm getting shot at the crib when I got the disc in, even if it's a DVD. DVD sounds better than streaming.
It does.
Forget about a 4K disc or a Blu-ray. That shit smokes it.
Yeah, you're right. The standards for the discs versus the standards for a streaming platform are inherently going to be lower for the streaming platform because the streaming platform has to host all of that data simultaneously, the different. But a disc, you could put, you know, 5 gigs onto a disc. It doesn't matter. The one movie could take up 5 gigs, whereas if you're a streaming service, you don't want to allocate 5 gigs to one fucking movie. Right. So you got to compress the shit out of it, which, you know, Peter doesn't understand what we're talking about, but it degrades the quality of the movie. And to be honest, on his shitty speakers, he wouldn't notice, but look at those headphones. But like, but we have these, you know, the high end gear and you want to hear it. I'm a fucking nerd for that. I don't want to listen to bad quality audio.
I hate it.
It really does bother me.
I can't watch it. If you don't have a surround system, I'm not watching TV at your house.
It's tough. I don't
you
have
go to a girl's house. System. You're like, girl, you can put it on for background, but I'm not watching shit.
It's funny because I always had the friend where I went to his house and he had like the nice stereo.
Right. Yeah.
And I just had like, I was like playing cassettes in my mom's fucking Buick and that was it. Like that's the best. And it was like, 12 inch TV with the VCR built into the TV.
Right. Yeah. I had one of those.
I always had the friend who had, cause like the thing is like, I'm the oldest of four and everyone in my family just breaks shit.
Yeah. Right.
So if I ever bought like nice equipment, sooner or later, one of my brothers was gonna, you know what I mean? Like I let my brother borrow my car once and he gave it back to me with a sandy boogie board and McDonald's garbage in the car. Like, he could have cleaned it 5 minutes before.
Bad. I thought you were going to say he crashed it. It's a little
disrespectful. No, well, actually, the other brother crashed my car years later. But, like, for whatever reason, like, it sticks in my mind, but it's like, no one's, like, taking care. You know what I mean? Like, if you don't even, if there's, like, sand in a boogie board, like, there's no way I'm going to have, like, a nice stereo in that house. You know what's funny is everyone I knew who had nice shit came from small, quiet families. And I came from a big, loud family, so I could just never have nice shit. So that's maybe
you're on your own now. Go get.
Yeah, but I'm like but I'm programmed this way.
It's not even. You got to fight it, and also you really, Peter. I mean, you would like you're so bad with technology that it actually like limits your enjoyment of your life. Like it's that bad of a problem. It's not even like most people's issues, like where it's like they could optimize, they can make it a little bit better. But Peter, like he can't even get on the internet sometimes. Like. I mean, okay. You called me with these crises, and I have just simple problems. Go ahead.
My remote was like my remote wasn't working for my TV, so I just gave up streaming stuff on my TV. I'm like, I'm just gonna live a life. I pay for Prime and Netflix, but I'm like, I'm just gonna live a life where I don't have that in my life.
Buy a remote. Buy a fucking remote, or man. Batteries. Amazon. It'll come to the crib, dude.
I'm stubborn.
4 hours.
I'm very stubborn.
But Jeff Bezos made that for you.
He did.
I know.
Specifically. You know how much shit is in my house? I would never own, but because Jeff Bezos sent it here, I got fucking new oven mitts.
No,
man.
I
wouldn't have new oven mitts.
I had a session with Alex where he just like cleaned up my phone and my laptop for me.
We literally, I could have charged you like $200. That was a good session.
Every 5 minutes, it was like, why is this like this?
And I'm the biggest nightmare.
I don't know. I found out that day that no one else uses iTunes anymore. I thought I was.
It doesn't even.
I thought I was at the cutting edge.
I use them all. Whatever.
Well, I mean, look, iTunes is there. It's just the way it was the way you had it configured. Strange.
I'm like, what about my CDs? Alex is like, what do you mean your CDs? I'm like, I just want to listen to my CDs.
Sell those shits on eBay if they got value.
Oh my god.
Yeah, Alex, did you pick up his phone and like just get anxiety from all the red?
Oh yeah. Well, he didn't have like a single megabyte of space on either his phone or his computer.
Oh wow.
Like,
so
why
is
everything going so slow? And it's like his computer was it was all maxed out. Everything.
No resources. Yeah. Zero.
And he didn't understand that the photos take up a lot of space. You got to put them on the iCloud. And he was like, he had iCloud. He wasn't using it. We figured it out though. I hope it's working out for you.
There's a lot of people.
It's that way. This is the thing, Pete. You're not.
You're not alone.
You're definitely not alone.
I just want. Yeah. I want to have people in my life that are good at this stuff. Like I don't. Right. It's just. You know what I mean? Like. Everyone brings their own talent to the table.
Well, like, what's interesting is that it's becoming a skill. Like, I'm 28, so I'm a little bit younger, I think, than you guys. But a lot. Yeah, I know how old Peter is. I didn't want to assume anything. But
I'm old.
It's becoming a skill that is, like, to just understand technology is, like, it's becoming, like, foundational. You can't even be, like the way Peter's mindset is anymore. You'll get lost in just basic, like how to apply to a job or something. Like,
right. That's true.
Very basic shit.
And it's funny because, like, you know, I just thought about it. So do you guys have any experience with like counterfeit? Because like counterfeit technology has changed too.
I mean,
like, from the movie.
What do you mean, like experience?
Well,
when I
used to work at Tao's big restaurant.
I make money in my crib sometimes.
No, we would get fake bills and fake credit cards all of the time.
Okay.
And right. I kind of became a little bit of an expert. I remember because it's funny, the servers, it's so like archaic, like we would cash them out, meaning like the servers would walk with their cash every night. So a manager would actually have to like give them cash from their credit card tips. And there was a night where like two of them tried to pass, cause, like basically if they get stuck with a counterfeit bill, it's like their fault. But if the manager gets it, then the house eats it. Right. So this fucking server walk, and I'm sitting in like a brightly lit, like fluorescent lit office, and this server walks in and he holds up a 50, and from 5 feet away from me, I'm like, get away from me with that fake fucking $50 bill. Like, and it was like you just become like an expert at because it's one of those places where people would constantly try to pass. Like there are gangs of like people that would try to go around. They would experiment with like one bill,
right.
Then they would call their friends and then they'd have a party of 12 people and then they would, you know, spend $600 with fake $50 bills. Or with fake credit cards, it would, if you swipe the credit card, the name that came up on the computer screen was different than the name on the credit card.
Oh,
because they stole the magnetic strip off the credit card.
Right.
So it's funny. It's like, speaking of like technology, like that, even that, like this movie is very like old school, like the plates and like the paint, the guy mixing the paint by hand.
Yeah.
Now it's like they're just stealing your identity off the computer. Like,
well, yeah, anymore. It's completely changed. But when I worked as my first job ever when I was like 15, I worked at a supermarket, and the conversation that they had with us about counterfeit bills is basically it was if it's obvious, like you know don't accept it. But basically the idea was there's a bunch in circulation already, and you know you're just gonna have to like know that. Like nobody made a big deal out of it, really. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'm weird, but I just know that there was a bunch that people were like iffy on, especially like
when you're working in a place where you're just like getting a ton of cash.
Yeah,
it becomes like, one of those. I remember I chased a. It was a guy and a girl, and we had security on earpieces, so you'd be like security to the front door, and of course the security guard was in the bathroom, and I was like, yo, security, front door. So I ran out, and by the time me and the security guard got there, the guy ran down the block, but I like cornered his girlfriend, and I was like, Jesus. you're gonna stay here until your boyfriend comes back. And she's like, honestly, she's like, I don't know why they're trapping me. I'm like, we're trapping you because your boyfriend stop hanging out with dudes that fucking try to steal dinner. She's like, I don't understand, I don't know anything. I was like, you knew that this guy couldn't afford this dinner that he took you to town for, but all of a sudden he's throwing bills around.
Was that your black girl voice?
Yeah, well, yeah,
I was trying to do it as ambiguous as possible. So I don't get accused of anything.
Yeah.
Why are he looking at us?
I was gonna say she didn't necessarily have to know too.
She could have been white urban.
He might have been finessing. You know,
she could have been an American ninja. You don't know.
Oh God.
Yeah. So wait, should we play this? We didn't give our mans a shout out.
So this is an unusual episode because we have a filmmaker who we want to promote his film, Perry, which we're going to talk about in a second. But we also, I did In Godfrey We Trust a couple weeks ago, big podcast with Godfrey and our friend Andre Kim.
Yeah.
And somebody saw me mention the podcast, and he's a voiceover artist in the Middle East.
Yeah.
So he reached out to me on Instagram, and
let's give his name.
I'm going to just say he goes by Vocal, which he is an anagram for Vocal. It's a voiceover creative artist lyricist.
Yeah, and the handle's what, like v.o.c, like Vocal, right?
Yeah, so it's at v.o.c.a.l. We'll put that in the information.
Gotcha.
And he just said that he listened to the podcast, was a fan, and he actually made us like an 80s action movie trailer.
Yeah. That's very cool. We should play. I'm going to play it right now and see if you guys could hear it.
Yeah, he's from Abu Dhabi. He reached out right after he heard me on the Godfrey podcast. So it's amazing that he did this and like made this like incredible, like really funny, really good trailer. So I definitely would like to play that.
Yeah. One sec here. It should work. Let me know if you guys can hear the audio here. All right. You hear that?
Yeah.
Who are these people?
I'm Peter Garacci.
I'm Alex Bechera.
They started a podcast.
Why don't you call it Kill You Last?
Yeah.
To honor 80s action movies.
He just put on brand new army pants in the heat.
There will be action.
He is in the middle of a field, surrounded.
More action.
Totally exposed, and he doesn't get hit once.
Tension.
You had, like,
Peter, I gotta ask you, if you stop hitting the table.
This is a movie that really is the template for the 80s action movie.
Peter Garacci, Alex Bechera, they will kill you last. Podcast.
It's fucking great, right?
Amazing is that?
Yeah,
that's fucking great, dude. That's your new opening.
I fucking love it. I think we should start using it as our opening. I love it.
Yeah, incredible. I can't.
That's
believe
really
that.
Cool, guys. That means you're doing something. Shit, that's great.
Yeah, dude. I mean that guy put it together so quick too, because like you only did the Godfrey podcast like a couple of weeks ago. So
yeah,
I mean,
this was a few days after.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, shout out to that guy.
Good editor's fast.
Yeah, vo.c.a.l, right? We'll put it in there. But, yeah, Vocal. We both follow him. If you follow us on Instagram, you can find him there, too. Yeah, and he does that kind of work for, I think, for a living. I don't know for a living entirely, but he's obviously really good at what he does. Got a great voice, that dude. So
yeah,
we'll probably hit him up to make some future ones too, right? We talked about
it. For sure. Now he wants to like collaborate with us. So
yeah, we should. We're gonna work. Awesome. With him. Make
that's
some more.
That's what you work with people. When people want to work with you, that's awesome. That's
hell yeah. And yeah, speaking of work, I mean, you've been working on a bunch of shit, Perry, and we didn't talk about it much, but you've been in a lot of shit too. You're an actor and filmmaker, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah, it's recent. The last 2 years, I was very fortunate. I met an agent and a manager. I don't have an agent. I have an agent for commercials, whatever. I met a manager and I started going out and I booked 10 roles in the last, in the last 2 years. Yeah. Yeah. And
what are some of your favorites out of the 10? Let's see.
I am the lead's lawyer in, Power, Black Show Power.
Oh yeah. The lead guy,
Ghost. I'm his lawyer. I had two scenes, but one scene showed,
Dude, that's great, man.
Yeah. So it was cool. Daredevil. I walk Matt Murdock into a deadly situation. I walk him through a prison and into a deadly situation and leave him to die.
Oh, shit.
Law and Order. I interrupt the two leads having a very emotional conversation.
Hell yeah.
But it's very quick. What else is there?
Dude, those are huge. All three of those.
Yeah.
Are massive.
Pacino Show, Hunters, Hightown.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's good. It's all a little under five stuff. I walk in, I say something, I get out. But, it's a start. It's cool.
Great, man.
Dude,
and
that's fantastic.
Like a talented filmmaker. Like, yes. You sent us a short you're working on that will be released soon if it's not released by the time we release it.
Yes, 180 seconds.
And, looks amazing. Like, just a beautifully, like, just the way it's shot is gorgeous. And it's, like, so funny, like, so creative, like.
Yeah, I really love this. I love the idea. I don't want to give it away necessarily, but maybe you give it away as much as you want. What was the mindset before you, want to create?
I'll do the short log line. 180 sure. Seconds is a film about a man who goes back 6 months into the past to tell his past self not to get fat. That's there's more than that, that's the impetus behind it. Basically, I mean, I shot this in July, very early, actually over the 4th of July weekend. I was just looking at everything going on and I was like, oh, I want to shoot something. I had a camera. I actually ended up having an extra camera, somehow, and I was just like, all right, well, let me shoot something. And it was, everyone's very much observing COVID. Mm-hmm. It's still crazy. It's like they try to get a few people together. You can get a few rogue folks together who don't give a shit, but it's hard, you know?
No.
So I was like, I really wish I could go back and tell myself some things. And I was like, all right. So I actually had the idea for it in April, and I kind of saw, the writing on the wall that we were going to be locked down for a while. Mm-hmm. So I started growing my hair in April. And shot in July. So that's when you'll see what I look like when I don't shave my head and face for almost 3 months.
So you planned that out for months in advance that you were going to, play a future version. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. So it really does work. I mean, I was surprised to see the difference too. And the idea that would you shoot those two like before and after you shave? Like how do you, I'm so stupid. I'm thinking linear aspect of it that you had to be. You had to be clean shaven before because that's how the time.
Listen, I shot. Obviously, I had to shave all the hair with hair. I shot all that stuff. I mean, the hard part was I did get someone to read through part of it with me, but then I ended up doing a lot of it in a room by myself. I'm acting with no one for most of it. I'm all right, and I'm trying to figure it out. I don't have someone watching. Mm-hmm. For lighting it and all that stuff, I was able to do it remote with my friend who's the DP in LA. So I was like lighting it. But then when I was doing the acting, it was actually kind of nice. I was like, I'm going to do this by myself. And I just kind of explored. My first assembly cut of it was 20 minutes. The second cut was 6 minutes. And what you see now is 3.5 minutes. So,
And not just blow smoke up your ass, Perry, because I'm like, I do. I think you're very talented and everything that I've seen that you've done, because
it's quality.
What everyone's doing right now is making shit alone of them talking to the camera,
right?
Which I still have kind of held off not doing. And so everything is sort of, that's what everyone does now. It's, oh, right. It's me, whether I'm playing a character or lip syncing to fucking President Trump.
Yeah.
It's just me alone talking to the camera. So you, like, talking about artists with limitations, you took the limitation of you alone as a performer and a creator.
Right.
And you found a new way to do that that no one else is doing, which right. I was like watching it. I'm like, oh, that's ingenious. Because unlike Alex, I figured out that you shot the hair part first and then
so
shaved.
Stupid.
And then shaved and then that. Because it's hard. It's either that or wait 6 months to fight.
It's so stupid. I don't know why I thought that.
Fresh shave and then wait.
Yeah, yeah.
Leave it like that. You got to leave everything locked
what's,
off.
What's faster, growing a mustache or shaving a mustache off? Yeah. Which one can I do quicker?
Well, it's impossible because, you know, before. Never mind.
Well, they say, like, even with movies where there's, like, extreme weight gain or weight loss, you can actually, from what I understand, you can actually gain the weight back fast. But, like, the weight loss
is way harder.
Slow.
Of course.
So, like, usually, like, a movie where, like, I mean, I don't know if you guys ever seen the movie Rescue Dawn. It's fucking amazing with Christian Bale and
I saw it, but I don't remember.
They're POWs, and they're all, like, gaunt. And they filmed it in reverse because, you know, they were super skinny, and then they were able to put the weight back on.
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty, relatively quickly.
Yeah, that's what I really wish if I could have done it a little differently, I would have shot the stuff with me with hair and then waited a month to lose, you know, but I had to shoot it with two cameras because one had to be locked off with a split screen and all this stuff.
Yeah.
So
I don't need to go back 6 months because every day I wake up and I go, why am I this fat?
Yeah. There you go.
Like, I don't need any, there's no time travel necessary because every day I'm like, oh, maybe I'll do push-ups today.
It doesn't matter how far you go back. It's the same shit. There's no point you can warn yourself. All you can just say is go work out, motherfucker.
Yeah. The only thing I did shave my beard a little, you know, tighter since the corona has started. But other than that, there hasn't been any other drastic change.
You look good, Pete.
You do look good.
And Alex is young, so he's just great. You have to wake up and you're good.
He bounces back now. Quicker.
Yeah, a little bit.
God bless. 28.
I had a great time doing this, and yeah. We don't really blow smoke up people's asses. This is, if you're listening to this right now, go watch that video. It's well worth the 3 or 4 minutes you're going to put into it. And I'm assuming, Perry, you're going to be blasting it out on your social media.
Yeah. If anybody wants to see it, I think the easiest thing to do is just follow my YouTube page, which is youtube.com/PerryStrong, my name. Obviously I'll be putting some, I'm not sure, I haven't decided if I just drop it and, or do I, if I put one of those countdown things, I'm still, you know, I can't say that I mastered the social media, approach to this, but it'll be, it'll be on my Instagram. It'll be on my Twitter, which, you know, it'll be on everything. So
we'll share that. I'll definitely share that out.
You make a joke, Vin Diesel is a punchline and a joke in it.
That was my favorite joke.
Have you seen Vin Diesel's short film that got him noticed, Perry?
Of course.
Yeah, so that's a really interesting. I don't know if you know about this, Alex. Like,
He
couldn't get any traction in Hollywood because he was,
I think,
mixed race and ethnically ambiguous, and they were always kind of like, well, what are you? So he made a short film about being an actor where no one can, like, kind of place him into categories and stuff. And I think Spielberg.
It's called Multifacial. Spielberg saw Multifacial, and Vin Diesel became famous and never made a good movie again.
Yeah,
he got what he wanted, but he sucked. All the
never
movies sucked.
Really dealt with being an actor that no one can place ethnically ever.
He's so talented, and he's making. I mean, listen, I want to be in the Fast and Furious. I should shut the fuck up.
He's doing fine.
I want to be Vin Diesel's brother who gets killed in the beginning of the movie.
I'll take John Pankow's career if I can do 7 years as the friend I'm mad about you.
That's a great career. Yeah,
please, anything. I'll take anything.
I'm at the point
I'll be in a fucking loincloth getting whipped. You know, I'm like, whatever. As long as there's a residual, a good payday and a residual check, it's, I mean, come on.
Yeah, I'm thinking, like, which one of my friends is going to get the sitcom deal? You know what I mean? I'm like, let me be nice to these 4 or 5 guys because I want to just play the, I'll play the homeroom teacher for the kid.
Right. Yeah.
In the sitcom. Like, I'd be happy with, or any the mechanic.
Any of those, you know what? I'll be honest. I'm making this short, and you know, I just made a shot another one yesterday. I won't talk. We'll follow up again when that's done. But
excited.
I'm like, yo, if people are getting deals off of lip syncing to Donald Trump, I'm like, I mean, the bar's low. I'm not trying to diss that person. I congrats, no, she's awesome, sure, whatever. Yeah. But it's just like, that's insanity to me. So I'm like, all right. That actually helps me with pushing this. I'm like, all right, I can do something that has quality and you know, it's hard to get together. And, you know, I had all these people, I've had like 8 different people working on this all over the country, you know? So I'm like, all right, you know, this is the time to work. I'm trying to keep this a positive thing, you know, and try to be productive. Like, you guys are doing this. Like, yeah. You know, it's like, it's not, you know, a lot of people are just kind of sitting around.
No, yeah, for sure.
Not to do that, you know?
The easiest thing is to do nothing.
Yeah.
So just to make anything
and already. Criticize to do nothing and criticize people that do things.
Yeah. So we just got to keep. Right. We're just going to keep making stuff.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
And you know, the one thing I'll say about the person with the lip syncing, like it, you know, it's hot now, right? But you know, let's say he doesn't win the presidency, which is totally a very real possibility. I mean, are people really going to be that interested when that special comes out about, you know, what that person has to offer? I don't really know. I don't know. I could see that flopping pretty hard.
I hope she wins everything. Just because I'm not a hater, but I'm just like, I'm just saying, guys, the bar's low. Let's all make some shit.
And that's a low bar.
Because this is that time, they're like, well, maybe we can sign everybody. Because there's certain points in time, there was in the late 70s,
mm-hmm.
you were a shitty band, you still got signed. Because everyone was just trying to put everything out and make everything. Yeah. So if we're about to hit that shit, I want my shot at my one movie, and then I'm going to go teach. That's it. I want to make one good movie. I want to go teach, and I want to disappear. That's it.
I think you'll get it, man. You're making moves, for sure.
Yeah. I'm trying, man.
Perry, this was great, man. So glad to finally have you on. Like, we've been
Thanks for having me on, man. You know, I'm a fan of you guys. You guys are awesome.
This was a great pairing. This is a great, I mean, I love having people on that really know what they're talking about with films, and just watching you and Peter bounce ideas off each other is great. So, we'd love to have you back on anytime. If you want to promote something or whatever.
I'll come by. Yeah, anytime. Yeah. I love you guys, you know. It's awesome. Thank you.
Peter, you got anything? Because I know you're doing some shows.
Did a show yesterday in Connecticut with a bunch of guys, Larry Bay, Andre Kim, which was great. It was like
outdoors.
No, it was inside. What do they call it? It was capped on how full it could be. It was like 50% capacity.
Gotcha.
Very cool. But it was great to like.
Dude, you did comedy inside. That's amazing.
Like, in an Italian restaurant, like you know, you never know how like the makeshift stage. People have been there for an hour eating. You don't know. You know
how were they?
They were great. Like, the thing is, right? People right now are. For the last couple of years, everybody's just been sitting home, fucking watching Netflix and getting food delivered to their house. So to get people out of the house was so difficult. Now people are desperate to get out of the house.
Yeah.
And so appreciative to just see anything.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, it could have been one of those situations where there was a drunk lady heckling or, you know, some guy in the audience saw that he was a comedian. Nothing. Super respectful.
Oh, nice. That's awesome.
People were like, they were into it. They were laughing, but they were, you know, they were just a good audience. Like start to finish, it felt great. And to be honest, again, like you never know. I was talking to a friend of mine who's like really only done shows in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, listen, you know, you walk into the Pear and every time the room looks exactly the same.
It's the same thing.
You walk into a random Italian restaurant in Pennsylvania, you don't know if you're setting up the speakers. You don't know if the microphone's going to, you know what I mean? Like I've shown up for guest spots and the lady's like, oh, by the way, I need you to host and set up the speakers and the microphone. I was like, oh, that's not a guest spot. Like you're just trying to cheat me out of money.
Right.
You know, because you know that I'm young and I'm hungry.
Right.
But, so it's, again, it was like to walk into a situation like that where you have no idea, like, you know, does the owner understand what we're doing? Is he going to try to one of the last shows I did before lockdown.
Yeah.
We did a show at a club, but then he booked us at another show.
I've had that.
So we had a race. Like I got off stage and then I raced to the next venue and then the other guy got off stage and raced behind me.
Yeah.
And the next venue was a restaurant and the owner's like, listen, he goes, we want you to heckle these people. He's like, this guy, he owns an excavating company.
Oh no.
And I'm like, what? Come he goes, on, yeah, bro. Just say something. And I'm like, I was like, we don't really. I was like, let us do the show.
Yeah.
You know, like, and we'll. He goes, well, the last time they had a comedian, they did that, and I was like, I don't know. So on stage, I was like, let me give the owner like a little something. So I was like, oh, who's, you know, who's Tom the excavator guy? No one knew who he was in the room.
Oh, no.
He had nothing. There was no expectation of any, like, no all one else nothing. In the room cared.
Yeah. Yeah.
It opened up a, like this thing for nothing. It went nowhere.
But a nice hole like, in your set. That's
yeah, yeah, it was like, right, I had go. To dig myself out of the hole totally. From the very beginning.
Yeah.
And I'm like, just...
Those guys never, whenever they say something like that, you either...
Disregard.
Yeah, you pretty much always disregard it. Unless, yeah, so unless they're paying you a ton of money and then you do
it. So this time it was like, you know, again, so like now I go into a situation, I'm like, is the owner going to have me, you know, does he want me to talk about his wife, whatever it is. And this guy was like, he's like, no, just go do what you guys want to do.
Good.
And he was just so happy that we packed out the restaurant that it was great. But that's I have awesome. If this comes out on Thursday, I have two...
Yeah,
like Zoom. I'm doing Joey Rinaldi's got like a storytelling show on Twitch and Zoom. So I'm doing that on Thursday, and then
what is that? Thursday, September 3rd,
whatever, 4th, September 3rd. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And then I'm also doing Eric Grooms, who's been was one of the first guests ever on the podcast. Yes. He's got the Very Good Comedy Show. So I'm doing that show also on Thursday.
Okay.
So I'm actually hopping spots on digital. I've never had to hop from one Zoom to another Zoom, but I'm gonna
that's
do it.
Amazing. I think I might pop into that Twitch one. Joey gave me an invite to that. I don't know, we'll figure it out. I don't really have anything planned, but yeah. All right. Otherwise I think that's it from us. And yeah, we don't have anything lined up, but we'll get some people. We'll figure it out. We'll be back next week for sure. Yeah. Thanks everyone. Oh, and shout out again to Vocal. We'll link everything. That guy puts out really good stuff.
Yeah, Vocal.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Peace.
Thanks for having me, guys.